Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
It's a Reaction Monday on Sports Radio 610. Brought to you by Coors Light. Here's Payne and Pendergast.
Indiana right center field, back at the track. It is off the wall. In to score is Bregman, and the Astros strike first in game six. First and third, one out here in the seventh. Runner going, struck him out, throw down, got him, double play, and the inning is over. Tucker hits it in the air to left, back at the wall, gone, home run, 5-0 Houston in the eighth. Here comes the 0-1, fly ball into left, that should do it, Astros win the pennant.
There it is. Astros win the pennant. Third time in 5 years. Joe Buck on the call there on Fox. And the World Series begins tomorrow at Minute Maid Park as we welcome you back into the 7 o'clock hour here. Payne and Pendergast, Sports Radio 610. One guy that did not get any shine in those highlights that we just laid out there, Seth, but undoubtedly deserves it, was probably the Astro who I was most nervous about going into Game 7, and that was Luis Garcia, who was outstanding on Friday. The way you described Jose Urquidy in the previous segment was the polar opposite of what Luis Garcia was on Friday. I think it took him like 12 or 13 pitches to throw his first ball of the game. Like, he was, his first 10 or 11 pitches in that game, I felt like, were strikes. He was, his command and velocity were unbelievable, and it was little tweaks with Brent Strom in between starts, by and large, that got it done.
He was 3 miles per hour faster on average than he was during the regular season. And what was it, three pitches that were the fastest pitches he'd thrown all year? Because he threw 97 twice, right?
Yeah, here are the numbers. Here are the numbers.
Okay.
During the season, Luis Garcia, this is courtesy of Jake Kaplan of The Athletic, Luis Garcia hit 97 miles per hour on the gun on his fastball one time during the regular season. Once. And it was on July 20th on his first start after the All-Star break. So this is his first start after the All-Star break. He's had 10 days of rest or whatever. He hits 97 on the gun. Friday, he hit 97 on the gun twice in the first inning and on 8 of his 47 fastballs. So something he had done once all season long, he did 8 times in 47 fastballs on Friday. And as you touched on, Seth, his velocity on his fastball was 3 miles an hour faster on Friday than it was in the regular season. Apparently, Brent Strom and Luis Garcia got together and watched some video. And we know that Garcia left that game, too, because of some soreness in his knee that he'd been experiencing for a while. Apparently, Brent Strom made a slight tweak to Garcia's foot placement to relieve the stress on his knee. And this extra velocity was like a byproduct of this. He discovered plutonium by accident is what Brent Strom did. And the plutonium was in Luis Garcia's right arm. Who knew? Who knew?
I know. It was kind of like when Josh James fixed his sleep apnea and all of a sudden his velocity went up way higher than
102 on the gun.
Except that was over the course of one off season, right? Josh James came back, had fixed his sleep apnea, and he was throwing the ball harder. This is from one game to the next, which is, you know, the great thing about that, Sean, is that even if somebody wanted some theory about how it was PEDs or something, PEDs don't work that fast either. It's not like you go from one game to the next. Like, this was just very clearly and like obviously a result of him changing his foot placement. And I guess it would make sense that if it's something that bothers his knee less, it might also be in a more powerful position for him. And it might end up being a permanent change, which is pretty exciting because Luis Garcia was very, very good this
already
year.
Good.
He was already rookie of the year quality out there all year long. And this is very exciting, not just for this series, but potentially what comes over the next few years.
Can I give you some more Luis Garcia courtesy of Jay Kaplan? You want to hear some more stuff?
I'll take all the Luis Garcia you have, sir.
Especially when it involves numbers, you nerd, yeah. 85 to 89 miles an hour on his cutter. He threw 20 of them. The Red Sox swung at 13 of them, and they missed on 12 of them.
Yeah, there were so many hard whiffs, too, and they were – it was kind of like the other night with Urquidy. Remember Urquidy first went out the other night, and they were – they started off – like, they were swinging hard right off the bat, and then eventually – and they were whiffing, but then they started making contact. That's where I was getting nervous with Garcia because I'd already seen this with Urquidy. Urquidy came out, and it looked like he was going to mow everybody down. Guys were whiffing hard. And Luis, same thing was happening. He just sustained it for inning after inning after inning. It was really cool.
Yeah. What was your favorite moment of the series? Like, what was the moment that got you most? In a series that had a lot of moments but not a lot of close games, did you have a particular favorite that got you more fired up than the rest in this series?
Read off Jordan's moments for me, and I'll pick amongst those.
Jordan, okay, there was Jordan peppering the Green Monster, and there was Jordan a triple away from a cycle in Fenway Park in Game 5. He had the home run early. He had the double and the single off the wall, and then in Game 6 he had the double. Oh. He had the double that Kike Hernandez dropped in center field. Probably should have been an error, but they gave him a double, which was fine. He hit it to the deepest part of the ballpark. I love the triple that he hit in Game 6, where he just, for whatever reason, they were shifted way around the other way in the outfield. They were shifting Jordan to hit either to center or to the opposite field. Jordan's got to be the hardest guy to put a shift together for, because he hits the ball all over the place, and he hits it equally hard to the opposite field as he does when he pulls the ball. He pulled that thing down the right field line, and there was just nobody there.
Like, that's the kind of shift that pitchers get angry about. Like pitchers know and understand the value of the shift, but they don't agree with the way their nerds do it.
Yeah.
And I guarantee you that there was some side-eyeing with the nerds right on that one. With Jordan, you do wonder, okay, why bother shifting? Like, certainly not the extreme shift, because he can put the ball wherever he wants. But no, you know what? I apologize. I shouldn't have even been thinking offense. Maldonado's pickoff.
I thought that. I was waiting for you to say
yeah,
that.
Yeah, yeah, because I was in my offensive frame of mind. You know, I'm all about the offense.
Yeah.
And no, Maldonado's pickoff was just – that was just so money. And it involved such precision out of everybody involved on that play that it was just – and the celebration afterwards was just so cathartic. That was my maybe favorite moment of the playoffs so far.
I don't know that I've ever seen a team celebrate a caught stealing like Maldonado banging his chest and Correa jumping up and down like they just pulled off the hidden ball trick or something like that. Like, it was, Correa looked like a little leaguer after that play.
You know why it's also hard to pick a favorite offensive moment, Sean, in this series, was because so many of them came with two outs.
Yeah.
Like, in this playoffs, the entire playoffs been like that. Remember, Correa's double against Chicago was with two outs.
Yep.
Like, he just, everything has been so pent up, and then the Astros continue to deliver with two outs. It's such a ridiculous rate.
Yeah.
It's such an embodiment of the word clutch that it's just been really, really cool to see. But it's also been very physically stressful.
I don't know. I can do 7 more games of this, but we'll give it a go. I thought you put it best earlier in the show when we were laying out just how good they've been with two outs in the postseason, not just in this series, but in the postseason. They've got 44 two-out RBIs in this postseason, most ever for a team before a World Series. I thought you put it best when I laid out what their OPS was as a team with two outs on base plus slugging. I gave the number out. You put it better. You said it's the equivalent of having Lou Gehrig up at the plate every time there's two outs.
It's, I believe, 1.08 OPS.
Well, 1.018 is the OPS.
018, okay. Yeah. So I think that's what Gehrig's was. And It's the equivalent of just every single time there were two outs, you're allowed to pinch hit Lou Gehrig. And just have Lou Gehrig, even if it doesn't matter how many times you insert him and take him out, he's your all-time two-out guy.
Yeah.
And, if he hits a double, he also then gets a pinch runner and goes back to home
plate.
That's
right.
And then gets the hit again.
He's all-time hitter.
That's who they've had. They've had Lou Gehrig as their all-time two-out hitter every single at-bat this series.
That's a great way to put it. Yeah, throughout the postseason, it's been amazing with two outs. Someone texted in. You can text the show, 713-572-4610 on a Reaction Monday presented by Coors Light. Remember when SI said the Red Sox had an advantage at DH in this series? I don't think it was out of line before the series started to say, and look, three games into the series, they did have an advantage at DH. JD Martinez was great. Like the rest of the Red Sox, he was great for three games, and then he was nothing for the next three games.
Oh, dude. I'll tell you, the biggest mess up, and I think it might have been that same SI comparison,
yeah,
was that... And I'm not even going to fault them for saying this beforehand because they were just going off of stats and they don't know. They didn't know what they were going to see. Okay. Kyle Schwarber being ranked as having the advantage over Yuli going into that series was based on offense.
Yeah.
And which was fair, even though Yuli was a batting title leader, Schwarber had hit for a lot more power this year. I know Correa probably would have picked Schwarber because Correa is more about OPS than batting average.
B-WAR plus.
But okay, so Schwarber's got a slight advantage there on the batting side of things during the regular season. But my God, could you not make more critical errors in a damn championship series? Oh my God. And it's not like Red Sox fans don't have a history of stuff like that,
right?
It was the difference between Yuli's fielding at first base and Schwarber was incredible. I don't know, it might have been worth like 1.5 wins or however the nerds would calculate it. It was astoundingly glaring how bad the fielding was at first base.
And he had errors at bad moments in that series too. It felt like when the Astros were making mistakes in the last three games, they were at times where you could weather this. They didn't make many, but you could weather the storm a little bit. Schwarber's came at the worst possible time. All right, 713-572-4610. So there was another champagne celebration for the Houston Astros, and there's a lot of folks who had been with the Astros the last few years who'd been involved in those, not involved in this one. How did some of these former Astros, one current Astro technically, feel watching the Astros celebrate another trip to the World Series? We'll do a little roll call next.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
It's a Reaction Monday on Sports Radio 610, brought to you by Coors Light. Here's Payne and Pendergast.
So we get another champagne celebration on Friday night. The Astros going back to the World Series for the third time in 5 years. The more these that the Astros do, Seth, the more and more people that there are, it's just the nature of sports, that are watching these champagne celebrations, who have been part of them before, who are no longer part of them now for various reasons. And for the Astros, probably with more various reasons than any other franchise in sports because of what this team has experienced over the last 2 years. There's a lot of people that aren't with this organization anymore through no choice of their own, but through punishment or termination or whatever the case may be. And there's some who aren't here anymore through their own choices because they chose to go somewhere else. There's even some who are technically still with the organization who just choose not to hang out with the organization anymore. I'm curious what you think.
Come on.
Well, Justin Verlander's never around the team anymore.
I'm like, I don't like this. I don't like whatever's going on with Justin Verlander.
Not my
right
fault.
Now. Like, I know it's not your fault. So Justin Verlander hasn't been around. So what? That doesn't change the memories, man. I don't want this besmirched or spoiled by whatever petty little things are going on right now.
I'm with you on that, but I'm just accepting the reality of it. It is consider it besmirched. Along those lines, I would imagine different thoughts going through different players' heads as they're watching this thing. And Verlander, Cole, and George Springer are the three that pop into mind for me. What do you think, as this celebration is going on, like, what do you think Justin Verlander is thinking as he's watching this go on, considering he is technically still on the team?
Well, he's technically still on the team. It's got to be tough. It's going to be tough for anybody who's not in the World Series that could be in the World Series. Yeah. But Verlander still doesn't have a World Series win, you know, despite obviously being a huge reason the Astros won a World Series. He doesn't have a World Series win yet, and I would imagine that's at least one little box he'd like to tick off. And he spent so many – like I said, it's unfortunate that for whatever reason there seems to be some kind of rift right now.
Yeah.
And what should just be a normal business relationship or situation.
I'm with you on that. I know I was being kind of tongue-in-cheek there. It does sadden me a little bit because Astro Verlander from 2017 through 2019 is one of my favorite Houston athletes of all time. He was just so good. He's on the short list of, at least in a small window, most dominant Houston athletes of all time. How about Gerrit Cole? Who last time we saw him in an Astros uniform wasn't even really representing the Astros. He was representing himself and Scott Boras in a post-game press conference. What do you think Gerrit Cole is thinking watching the
Gerrit
Astros
Cole.
Celebrate?
You know, I read yet another article this morning about how the problem with Gerrit Cole and the Yankees is he needs somebody like a Justin Verlander to, you know, who can give him counsel. And
okay.
Do you see this disease that the Yankees have? Like, they have this disease where they feel like the only way to solve problems is to ultimately spend money. Even when they tighten their belts a little bit and they start doing the right things, and like they have for the most part over the last five, six, however many years, where they've built from the bullpen or from their pipeline, they can't help it. Like at one point, it ultimately has to be like, no, we got to go out and spend $40 million a year for somebody else.
Right. Yeah. And
yeah. So I don't know. I think Gerrit Cole, Gerrit Cole was just so damn resolutely focused on becoming a Yankee that I feel like there's nothing else. It's like a girl who's like dead set on marrying the rich guy in her town or something. Nothing that happens in her previous life matters once she lands the rich guy. And Gerrit Cole landed his rich guy.
I think Springer is actually watching this stuff and really happy for the guys.
Yeah, I bet he is. He really – yeah, Springer, I almost feel like – Springer might not have a – he might not be capable of regret. And I mean that in the best way possible.
Yeah.
He's very much just happy for his buddies type of guy. And I'm sure he's still very – look, the Blue Jays are very promising moving on to the future.
Yeah.
So I think he's probably looking at it as like, yeah, this is awesome. I'm really happy for those guys. Let's create that stuff here in Toronto.
No doubt. And I think the fact that he got a ring, he was a World Series MVP.
Yeah,
I think he was able to check those boxes. All right, now it gets more complicated.
I know where you're going with this next one.
What is Jeff Luhnow thinking watching that champagne celebration? I mean, that's like 80% his team right there.
Yeah.
Not just the core from 2017, but Kyle Tucker, him holding on to Kyle Tucker and not trading Kyle Tucker when he had the chance to trade Kyle Tucker. Yordan Alvarez, getting him for Josh Fields. Framber Valdez, Jose Urquidy, Luis Garcia. These were all guys. This is not to diminish James Click's contributions in his one year as general manager, but this is still, by and large, Jeff Luhnow's team.
This is the only way Jeff Luhnow can cope with this mentally, Sean, and this is the only way, is to pretend it's kind of like if you've got an ex-girlfriend, but you know she's still in love with you, and you meet her and her boyfriend out or something, and like maybe her boyfriend's a little bit of a a jerk himself. It's fun to just think like, yeah, and ultimately she'd rather have me. Don't worry about it.
Okay.
There you go, Sparky. She's still texting me, but okay, cool. You just you don't say it out loud. You just think it. So likewise, maybe Luno convinces himself of that, even though that may or may not be true.
Yeah. I think Jeff Luno is watching these champagne celebrations with great regret. What about AJ Hinch?
Hinch, I think I'd almost put in Springer's category.
You think?
I think that, I think Hinch, and I'm saying this with all seriousness, whether it's Luno or Hinch or anybody else, especially with Luno and Hinch, at some point you do have to come to terms with things in your own mind and just accept them for what they are and move forward. And I think both Luno and Hinch probably have that about them. Like, they'll focus on remembering, like, the 2017 series, but they're not going to get too wrapped up in what the Astros specifically are doing.
Last one, and I bring this up specifically because of the champagne celebration in the clubhouse after clinching the ALCS in six games at Minute Maid Park. Brandon Taubman. Brandon Taubman, for those who don't remember, Brandon Taubman, former right-hand man to Jeff Luno, who was summarily fired after walking up to a small group of female reporters and flaunting the fact that the Roberto Osuna acquisition had worked out so very well when he had been acquired Osuna in 2018 in the midst of a suspension for alleged domestic violence. And those female reporters have been very outspoken, one in particular, about the acquisition of Roberto Osuna.
Yeah. Brandon Taubman, I'm trying to remember if he was actually mentioned at all in the sign-stealing investigation. I think, but let's just assume that maybe he would have been able to distance himself from that. He's got to be kicking himself perhaps the most because he had been tabbed as a bright young rising star.
He might be the GM baseball of this team right now.
Or another team.
Yep.
You know, like, really, there was a Brandon Taubman. His regrets got to extend beyond just even the Astros individually. It's that, man, he could have had Luno's job at any number of organizations, perhaps.
Yeah.
That would really suck.
I would imagine just the visual of the clubhouse with the celebration, given that's where his transgressions were, probably hit home closer with him maybe than anybody else. Just the sheer, not the fact that the Astros are winning, the sheer venue of the celebration is probably a really stark reminder. This is a good reminder on the text page that not everybody is tuned into what's going on. Can you guys explain to listeners what the Verlander quote-unquote drama is all about? I'm a regular Sports Talk listener. I have no clue what's going on. Thanks. He hasn't been around the team all year, and yet he's under contract. He's getting paid $33 million, and he's been working out away from the team. And there have been reports that that's rubbing some people the wrong way.
He was scheduled to pitch game one of the series. He wasn't scheduled to pitch. Sorry.
That'd be something.
And Granato reported that the team asked that not happen.
Yeah, I think it was the White Sox series.
It was the White Sox series.
It was the ALDS.
Okay, that's right.
Him and Mattress
Mack
were supposed to throw out the first pitch.
Yeah, so John reported that the team basically
the players went to the team and the players went to the team and said, he hasn't been around us all year. There's no need for him to get shine right now in game one when we're about to start the postseason here.
Yeah, which is, and the reason that that's notable is that, well, that reasoning might sound like it makes sense. If you think about the various people that throw out first pitches in these series, very few of them actually have anything to do with the success of the team at that moment.
There was none that threw out the first pitch on Friday.
Is Bagwell not going to throw out the first pitch or Biggio because, well, you know, they haven't actually been around that much. Come on.
Well, they're not getting paid $33 million to maybe be around for a little bit. I would say that. So that's for the texter. That's what the drama is all about. All right, we're going to do some headlines in the next segment. The Texans lost to the Cardinals yesterday, 31-5. The biggest storyline coming into this game and coming out of this game was DeAndre Hopkins and J.J. Watt playing against their old team. How was it for DeAndre Hopkins? And who was DeAndre Hopkins most excited to see on the Texans side of things? You will not want to miss this answer. That is next.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify is got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
It's a Reaction Monday from the Twin Peaks Studios on Sports Radio 610. Brought to you by Coors Light. Keeping Texas chill. Here's Payne and Pendergast.
Murray shotgun. Third and goal from the one. One back. Texans dig in. Murray fakes the give. And he looks over the middle. Hits Hopkins for the touchdown. Sidearm pass to DeAndre and the Cardinals take the lead.
Not really. It was just another game to me. I know some of those guys over there. This team, we got bigger goals. We knew we needed to handle business today, but we knew and know what kind of team that we have in this locker room. So I didn't want to make it a thing. It's just another game to me. Go out and play my game.
That's probably the sweetest revenge for J.J. Watt and DeAndre Hopkins, I would imagine, Seth, is the fact that they could just completely dismiss the Texans and say, just another game. For hey, man, we just had to go out there and take care of business. Not sure if you've noticed, but we're the only undefeated team left in the NFL. Like, they... The fact that they could sit there and make the Texans a non-topic when it came to the postgame might have been the sweetest revenge of all for especially DeAndre Hopkins, who I think has more of an axe to grind than J.J. Watt does.
he has more of an axe to grind than J.J. Okay, yeah. I was just thinking about J.J. and DeAndre in that game where it was almost a more emphatic statement that those two didn't get huge numbers and didn't need to get huge numbers in a blowout win.
It's typical of their team this year.
Yeah, I mean, it is a very, very complete football team.
Yeah.
And, you know, I texted with JJ a little bit yesterday, and that was the sense I got, was just like how complete a team they are. There's no need for anybody to be a hero or anything, you know? And then the other, whenever I text JJ, the one thing too, he's always very good about, like, JJ's tried to move on, you know, and not necessarily be petty about anything. But I always imagine when I see the little three little ellipses where it looks like somebody's texting,
yeah,
but then it drops, I feel like JJ was about to unload something.
Yes, I hate when people do that.
Yeah, but I feel like with JJ, whenever that happens, it's like he wants to say something. He's like, and then he thinks better of it because it's too, you know, he's too careful about all that stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm just a bum media member these days.
You should text him. You're like, I know you were about to send something. Send it.
It's nice to talk to a fellow defensive lineman.
That's right.
But I think that, you know, whether it's Hopkins or JJ or with, you know, Chandler Jones not playing in that game, that Cardinals team is just stacked.
Yeah.
They almost blitz on defense just to keep them from getting bored. You know, like they're so complete and deep throughout that they could win in any one of multiple different ways.
Yep. Here was DeAndre Hopkins. He was asked after the game who he was excited to see from the Texans side of things.
Is there anyone on the coaching staff or the team that you were kind of excited to see and play against today?
Yeah, the training staff, you know, a lot of those guys are still there. Those guys, you know, I probably missed two games my whole career, you know, while I was there. So, you know, that training staff right there, you know, you got to give those guys a lot of credit for allowing, you know, that to happen. And just, you know, talking to those, you know, those guys every morning, waking up, going to see those guys. I spent a lot of time with the training staff, probably more than the coaches in Houston. So, you know, I was excited to see those guys.
Okay, so everybody's laughing. Two things here. One, it's hard to listen to DeAndre not bring up any teammates. When you hear him not bring up any teammates, the initial reaction is, well, that seems a little odd that he doesn't, you know, he's not excited to see any of his old teammates. I would point out to you, if that's your thought, there's like eight guys left that suited up yesterday at the most that were teammates with DeAndre Hopkins. That's how much turnover there's been. The second thing, though, I love the last part where he said he spent more time with the training staff than the coaches. That feels like another wording of, I never really had a relationship with Bill O'Brien. Remember that?
Does that
feel that way to you?
Yeah, so that's what I wondered. And I almost wondered, but he kind of chuckled afterwards. I almost wonder if he started off making it as a serious statement, and then he realized, like, oh, yeah, that, I guess maybe that's kind of telling. Because it is, I mean, you spend a lot of time with the training staff. You get to be pretty good friends with those guys. But he didn't necessarily have that same. The other thing I thought about that was that, I thought maybe he was talking about these current coaches that obviously very few of these guys does he know at all other than Tim Kelly, really.
Right. They have so many weapons. Like, they had weapons, and then they went and got Zach Ertz.
to the Texans' credit, I think there are about 73 tight ends that could have been wide open on that, because I'm giving them credit for being as bad in coverage as they were. When you just completely and totally forget to cover the tight end and bother, and then take the most horrendous angles of pursuit afterwards, then that's going to happen.
So
Zach, that's why Zach Ertz got to be happy as hell. That play right there had nothing to do with Zach Ertz being Zach Ertz. That had to do with the tight end. The generic tight end being wide ass open on that play.
Yeah. Certainly the catch did. I would say his athleticism after the catch, that was very Ertzy.
Yeah.
And like his ability to run afterwards was pretty next level. Dude, they were handing the ball off to him in the red zone. I mean, I know he had a fumble overturned, but that's the kind of weapon he is. He's a tight end who you can actually hand the ball to on like little jet sweeps, and maybe he runs the ball into the end zone. Kingsbury scheming up plays, man. Like the play that we just played bumping into this seg, the Hopkins touchdown. Did Hopkins ever have a touchdown where he was as wide open on a play as he did? Like, he was wide open. He's 3 feet from Kyler Murray with nobody near him, and Kyler Murray basically just flips the ball to him.
Or just the play where DeAndre just sat there laughing about how wide open he was on
I'm
the
over
sideline.
Here. Yeah.
That was one of the funnier things I've seen in sports, was him like just kind of waving his hands in frustration and then realizing, like, okay, I guess I better come back towards the quarterback, and then just being so cool and nonchalant about it. It was a blast yesterday. I've never had more fun watching a football game than watching whatever that was that I definitely totally never had to keep myself from falling asleep by standing up. Yeah.
31-5, the final score. All right, we'll get to more in headlines here in just a second. Let's get a phone call in here. Joshua wants in. Joshua, you're on Payne and Pendergast. Good morning.
Good morning, Seth and Sean. So I just got two things I wanted to say. One, I feel like the Astros have been carrying Houston sports for like 5+ years. So if you're in Houston and you're not Astros fan, then I don't know what you're doing. And they honestly stopped me from banging my head against the wall. And two, somebody that didn't watch much of Braves baseball, what are some things as Astros fans that we should look out for?
Charlie Morton.
I appreciate the phone call, Joshua. Yeah, Charlie Morton, you should look out for Charlie Morton.
Yeah. Well, and I think that realistically, like, there's the Braves are constructed in a way that at least has looked a lot different than what the Astros looked like these past couple series. They have their starting pitchers. Nobody saw as many turns through the rotation as starting pitchers in the playoffs than the Braves did. So they, of all playoff teams, they had the most consistent slew of starting pitchers. And then their relievers are also very dependable. And that's the... I think the contrast there is they haven't had to be nearly as elastic in how they use their pitchers as the Astros have.
Yeah, and then I mean obviously Freddie Freeman is a perennial MVP candidate. I think the most impressive thing about the Braves is they're doing this entire season without Ronald Acuña, who's thought to be one of the 5 or 10 best rising stars in baseball. It's a team that's played its best baseball in the last couple months of the year. And even though they're an 88-win team in the regular season, I don't look at it that way. They are a team that, at least the way they're playing right now, this is going to be a really, really close, hotly contested series, and it's reflected in the odds. The odds right now, the Astros are a -135 favorite to win the World Series. That means you have to risk $135 to win 100. That's basically home field advantage baked into it, and that's it. These are viewed as two very even teams right now.
The other thing that's going to annoy you is Jock Peterson's pearl necklace.
Oh, I forgot he's on the Braves. We got to deal with his face.
They brought up they got Jock Peterson mid-season because of what you had mentioned. You know, Acuña was out, and they were already dealing with Marcell Ozuna being out as well because of domestic abuse allegations. So, like, there's been shuffling that's turned out very well, but the sum total is, I don't know what the whole backstory is, but Jock Peterson has some kind of pearl necklace that's all kinds of good luck.
He colored his hair, too, yeah. I think, didn't he? It looked like he colored his hair. He bleached his hair blonde. Jock Peterson's annoying. I thought when he got traded away from the Dodgers, I thought he was out of our lives. I never thought that he would float back into our lives as an Atlanta Brave. As far as the Astros carrying the Houston sports scene, I would say for the last 5 years, maybe stretching it, there was a time not all that long ago where we felt like we were in a golden age of Houston sports. I would say the last 2 years for sure, they've been carrying the Houston sports scene. Although, credit where credit is due. This young Rockets nucleus, very fun to watch. I know they're only 1-2 to start the season. Jalen Green, fun to watch. Bunch of three-pointers last night, dunk that made ESPN Sports Center. The Rockets are at a stage with the rebuild right now where I take solace in the little things like the young nucleus with Jalen Green. So there is at least that. All right.
Yeah, Jock Peterson, I'm looking at his face right now.
Fat.
Boy, you know what? But it's so childlike that you almost feel weird about wanting to punch it so bad. Like, I want to punch Tony Romo's face. It's a very punchable face, but I'd be punching the face of a man. Where with Jock Peterson, it feels like it's that obnoxious 13-year-old kid, and he knows that you're not allowed to hit him, so it just fuels him even more so. That's what Jock Peterson does.
I think you'd be fine because he would be standing there, and he would be the height of a normal adult. I think you would get over it. Yeah, I think.
But I'd still feel like, oh, boy. And then I'd feel bad for him. Like, this is just one of those overgrown 13-year-old kids that doesn't know how to handle himself yet.
He might be a little leaguer with a false birth certificate so he can get paid.
He's either going to become a well-rounded adult, or he'll be Richie Incognito, this kid, whatever it is.
Yeah. That's right. All right, let's get to some headlines.
Payne and Pendergast with today's headlines, brought to you by BaywayJeep.com.
All right, the Astros game one of the World Series is tomorrow night. We're going to talk plenty about the Braves. We just had that caller call in asking, hey, what are some things we need to know about the Braves? We're going to get this series teed up for you heavy tomorrow on the show. Dusty Baker has a history with the Braves. He was an Atlanta Brave during the Hank Aaron era. He says pretty fitting that they're playing the Atlanta Braves.
In the year, you know, the Hank Aaron celebration, to be in the year, you know, Hank Aaron's passing, you know, to go back to Atlanta and talk to his wife and his kids and all the people that, you know, that are close to the family. And also, I know a bunch of people that, you know, when I first started. So, yeah, it's very special to go back, you know, to Atlanta. I mean, this is kind of, it's going to be a storybook ending, really, for, you know, for all of us.
It's pretty cool for Dusty Baker. We had somebody text in a little earlier, Seth, about Dusty Baker asking, you know, is this his final run here? A lot's been made about Dusty not having a contract. James Click and Jim Crane both get asked about it when they're doing interviews throughout this postseason. And someone said, do we even know if Dusty wants to be back? Dusty made it pretty clear in the postgame. And again, this might have been the adrenaline flowing and things like that. But he said something to the effect when he was sitting with the Fox guys on the set there. That, you know, what if you win this World Series? And he said something to the effect of, come back and win another one next year. So my guess is that Dusty is having a blast coaching this team or managing this team. And then my guess is Dusty wants to be back. Win or lose in this World Series, my guess is Dusty wants to be back in 2022.
Yeah, and I think that, look, obviously there are various things that you could argue about or argue that Dusty could have or should have done better with decisions throughout the year or throughout the last couple of years. There does come a time, I think, where there's a if it ain't broke, don't fix it type of mentality. Like, and it's a hard line to walk in sports because you never want to be complacent whatsoever. But if you look at the good versus the bad and look at, and I think sometimes with Dusty, there's a tendency to discount what he's able to bring just in terms of his experience, his stability, his mentorship. I mean, like Framber Valdez alone, that's not Framber Valdez getting his mindset right and him crediting multiple people, but especially Dusty Baker for that. That alone is one of those major things that somehow doesn't get discussed because it's not about a specific in-game decision or what have you. But I think that's the kind of thing that really pays big dividends throughout the course of a season.
Yeah, I think the other thing, you're right, his presence with this team, his ability to step into just one of the most bizarre situations that a manager could step into. He got hired in February to manage a baseball team, or at the very least late January, to step into a team that had been to the World Series the year before and was dealing with an unprecedented punishment from a scandal. I think Dusty's done an amazing job. And I think, too, not just the intangible things that you're talking about, Seth, he made a lot of good decisions in this postseason so far. He's done a masterful job. He steered a team through the World Series that got 20 outs from their starting pitchers in the first four games combined in this series.
Yeah, that's a really good point, especially because I think a lot of the extreme attitudes about Dusty during the season, I didn't quite get because there were times when he was managing bullpen pitchers that just flat out weren't giving you anything at all. Like there were times where people were crushing him for using the bullpen too much when he had no choice but to use the bullpen too much. So that part of it, I guess it's a little poetic, I suppose, that the relievers were absolutely like the best. The relievers collectively in this last series were, especially at home, especially in victories, were like the best pitcher who ever lived.
Yeah.
I mean, it was they were astoundingly good.
0.49 ERA in the four wins for the bullpen. That's remarkable. I mean, that's just any way you slice it, amazing. The only run the bullpen gave up in the wins in this series was Presley's solo home run that he gave up. I think it was Devers who hit it in game one to make it 5-4. It was 5-3. Yeah. Solo home run makes it 5-4. And then Presley works his way out of the jam in that game. The bullpen was just dynamite. They've been dynamite all postseason long. They've been incredible. We're getting a few texts as follow-ups to some of our Astros topics on the show today, one of which is Justin Verlander not being around the team. This is the best counterpoint that I've heard yet, Seth, regarding Verlander not being around the team. If you were injured and couldn't pitch, but you were married to Kate Upton, would you rather hang around the team or be at home? Valid point.
Sorry, I'd rather spoon with Kate than Maldi, but that's just where we are right now. Although, if there were a pitcher that he wanted to spoon with, it probably would be Maldonado.
And I think you want to spoon with Maldonado a little bit.
Well, yeah, like in a metaphorical way.
Sure.
I want him to make let me know everything's going to be all right.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. People are asking.
And also, gun down anybody who would harm me. That's the big thing.
with a baseball. Get away from Seth. Ping.
How did he gun him down? With a machete.
That's right. That's right. Someone is asking, we were doing a segment a little bit earlier, how do these former Astros, whether it's players or employees, feel about the Astros in their champagne celebration? Someone says, what about Josh Reddick? I guarantee you Josh Reddick is nothing but thrilled for the Astros. He actually threw out a first pitch in the postseason for the Astros.
Right,
He is. Josh Reddick is viewed as one of those Yuli-style Astro legends. Like, didn't make an all-star team, and actually wasn't that great the last few postseasons for the Astros, but he was a significant part of the only World Series championship this team has ever experienced, and he was a big part of sort of the ethos of that team. With the woos and the belt and the underwear and the champagne celebrations and some of the redneckian qualities of Josh Reddick. So I think Josh Reddick is, like George Springer, I think is thrilled for these guys.
Yeah, it was Josh Reddick is one of like the lineage of culture creators that I feel like will always deserve credit for anything about this sustained level of success.
Yes.
And there are some guys in that culture that it was created that probably don't get as much credit as they should. Like, obviously, George Springer gets a lot of credit for creating a certain kind of culture. You know, this is like this fun-loving, passionate about the game. You're going to really care about your teammates to an extreme degree. I mean, other people, other guys that come to the Astros or leave the Astros talk about how the Astros culture is kind of unique. One guy, Sean, that I think should delight and take part and maybe even get a ring from Jim Crane at some point.
Who?
Hank Conger.
Oh!
Conger was the guy who started all of the really fun dugout celebrations, yeah, doing the robot dance and
yep,
everything. He got it. He kind of, I believe he was a little bit of the grain of sand that became a pearl that it was the Astros' current culture. I'd love to see Hank Conger come back and throw out a first pitch.
He was with the team in 2014, Seth.
I know, son, I know. That's my point, though. There was an element to Conger that I think kind of like Springer realized, like, oh, I can act like myself around
this
squad.
That's true. The next year, yes, that was the big nightclub atmosphere with the Astros.
Conger had the Springer personality before Springer could really let his freak flag fly.
You know what? I like that. Yes, Conger let's retire Conger's number while we're at it. Hank Conger, baby. The Astros game one will be.
Would you rather have Conger or what's his name? The damn Bud Norris. Bud Norris contributed more to the Astros on the field, maybe.
Barely.
For a longer duration. But Conger's part of this culture.
Yeah, no.
He's like our great, great, great grandfather.
Conger, I'm going to slap the lips off your face. Conger and Bud Norris in the same sentence. Stop it, Seth Payne. Hey, by the way, Red Sox, nice laundry basket celebration on the. I forgot about this. Someone pointed this out. It might have been in an article or maybe a tweet that I read. The little laundry basket celebration that they do, I think, is unique and it's fun. You should only do it if you're in a game that's close or you just took the lead or you're destroying the other team. They celebrated the home run that Framber gave up when they were down 7-0, the Red Sox did. I forget who hit it.
Saddest laundry basket.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
It's like, oh, here I go. I'm going to take my perfunctory basket right now.
Yeah, yeah.
Whoop-de-doo.
Oh, yeah. My God. You're like the DBs that celebrate a tackle 20 yards down the field and get up and taunt the guy. You tackled him 25 yards down the field.
Look, Sean, they had just seen their opponent have a 7-run inning. It was you got to stay in it.
Whatever.
And plus, that's a superstitious thing. I actually support them doing the laundry basket ride, no matter what because whatever streak there could be, they couldn't break their run or their tradition of doing the laundry
that's
basket.
True. Ride. I guess if Miami's going to do the turnover chain, Ben Gary, while they're down by 5 touchdowns in a game, then why not? Football, Texans Cardinals yesterday, 31-5, the final score. The Texans have now been outscored 102-8 in the last 3 road games with Davis Mills as the quarterback. It's just, it's really bad right now. Here's David Culley on what is your message to this team right now, coach?
Hey, we're going to stay together. There is a process that we're going through. We don't like where we are right now. When you come back and we watch the video and we look at things and we see the things that are happening that are putting us in this situation, as coaches, we got to make sure we correct those. We got to make sure that they're responsible for getting those things corrected. And we just take it one game at a time. The records mean nothing when we're preparing for the next team. Just like the team that we're playing, the record doesn't matter. All we know is the next game we play is the Rams, and we're going to look at that as we take it right now one game at a time and just looking to get that one win.
Okay, Coach. Well, I'll just let you know, they're 6-1, and they're really good at football, the Rams. Just FYI. Yeah. Yikes. It doesn't get any easier for the Texans. Seth, when does this team start to drop the rope on this whole thing? You know, on all the – just all the –
Positive. No, they already dropped the soap on this, Sean. Is that what you're saying?
No, the rope. So. Not.
Oh,
not,
oh, okay. They dropped the rope.
The soap.
Yeah. They. When do they drop the rope and just start shipping guys off wholesale and saying, "All right, if we're going to be getting outscored by damn near 100 points,
well,
on
when
the rope,
do when do all these high character guys that try regardless of what the record is? Oh. Like, when does it start to look like? When does it start to look like the positivity is just bouncing off of these guys like bullets off of Superman's chest?
I think that, look, we've talked about this before where sometimes there's a danger in only wanting guys who are awesome dudes no matter whether you're winning or losing, because really what's it matter anyway when you're losing? And okay, great. You got a hell of a guy when you're on a 2-15 season.
Yeah.
Okay, great. What's that do for me? I do think that they do have guys who are like pretty steady and will show up and work no matter what. There's some guys that are a little bit emotional on social media who might not be those foxhole guys. I think those guys probably get traded off for perhaps pennies on the dollar in the list. But I don't worry about it all of a sudden. Like, I don't worry about them all of a sudden, you know, being mutinous or anything like that. It's just going to be a miserable situation all year long. Go ahead.
No. Go ahead.
This is the one silver lining is that yesterday's score of 31-5 was a scoreigami. And
I keep seeing that. What is a scoreigami?
A scoreigami is a score that has never happened before in the NFL.
It happened last week in a game, 38-11 in one of the games. Yeah. I forget who.
This is the good news. I'm on the NFLScoreigami.com website where there's a thing that shows you. Look, much better chance of a scoreigami when you only score 5
points.
That's
right.
There's a bunch of them open. And this Texans squad has the ability to only score 5 points multiple times. As long as Jonathan Greenard keeps and Jacob Martin keep, you know, making big-time sacks and plays and what have you.
Antibodies to you, my friend.
Antibodies and all the scoregamis in the world to
thank
you.
Thank you, thank you, thank you. John Harris, Mark Vandermeer, they're up next. We'll see you tomorrow at 6 a.m. Have a great day, everybody.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.